Okay. The story of Naaman, 2 Kings chapter 5, and we're going to look at 1 through 19. For those of you on the podcast, Sunday, April the 21st, short series on faith. And so let's go ahead and read 2 Kings 5, 1 through 19, and that is the story of Naaman. And we're basically going to just act like a detective. You know, we're going to act like an Agatha Christie or a Columbo. You know, we're going to just go back and look at the facts, the who, what, where, when, and why of this story, and to see, and the why of that part is, why did God put this story in His Bible? He put it there for a reason. He didn't want to just fill up space. He put it there to teach us something in the story. So when you're a kid and you're in an E-Wing or a Vacation Bible School, you learn the Bible by the stories. And guess what? We're just still big kids, right? We're all big kids still. So we're going to look at this story. Verse 1 of chapter 5 says, "Now Naaman, captain of the host of the king of Syria, was a great man with his master and honorable, because by him the Lord had given deliverance unto Syria. He was also a mighty man in valor, but he was a what? He's a leper. And the Syrians had gone out by companies and had brought away captive out of the land of Israel a little maid, and she waited on Naaman's wife. And she said unto her mistress, 'Would God my Lord were with the prophet that is in Samaria, for he would recover him of his leprosy.' And one went in and told his Lord, saying, 'Thus and thus said the maid that is in land of Israel.'" Now here's what kind of blows my mind. You have this little captive girl that says, "Hey, go see this guy, and he can fix you of your disease that you have." And they listen to her. It would be like somebody one of the kids in the wing say, "Hey, you want to know how you can be cured of that cancer? Go talk to my God and go see his prophet." And you're like, would you listen to him? Probably not, right? They listen to this little girl. And let's keep reading, and it'll show that. "And one went in and told his Lord, saying," and that one is Naaman, "'Thus and thus saith the maid that is in the land of Israel.' And the king of Syria said, 'Go, and I will send a letter unto the king of Israel.' And he departed and took with him 10 talents of silver, 6,000 pieces of gold, and 10 changes of raiment." That sounds like quite a bit, doesn't it? I don't know about you, but I don't have 6,000 pieces of gold in my pocket. I may have 2 pieces of silver. They're not even really silver, I don't think. Maybe, if those 2 quarters are still in there. Verse 6, "And he brought the letter to the king of Israel, saying, 'Now, when this letter is come unto thee, behold, I have therewith sent Naaman, my servant, to thee, that thou mayest recover him of his leprosy.' And it came to pass, when the king of Israel had read the letter, that he rent his clothes, and he said, 'Am I God to kill and make alive, that this man doth send unto me to recover a man of his leprosy? Wherefore, consider, I pray you, and see how he seeketh a quarrel against me.' And it was so, when Elisha, the man of God, had heard that the king of Israel had rent his clothes, that he sent to the king, saying, 'Wherefore hast thou rent thy clothes? Let him come now to me, and he shall know that there is a prophet in Israel.' So Naaman came with his horse and with his chariot and stood at the door of the house of Elisha. And Elisha sent a messenger unto him, saying, 'Go and wash by Jordan.'" How many times? 7 times. Now you guys remember this story as a kid? Now some of you may, some of you may not. I don't know. "And so go wash 7 times, and thy flesh shall come again to thee, and thou shalt be clean." And let's look at Naaman's response. "But Naaman was wroth, and he went away, and he said, 'Behold, I thought he would surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God and strike his hand over the place and recover the leper. Are not Abana and Phapar rivers of Damascus better than all the waters of Israel? May I not wash in them and be clean? So he turned and he went away in a rage. And his servants came near and they spake unto him and they said, my father, if the prophet had bid thee to do some great thing, wouldst thou have done it? How much rather than when he saith to thee, wash and be clean. Then went he down and he dipped himself seven times in Jordan, according to the saying of the man of God, and his flesh came again like unto the flesh of a little child, and he was clean. And he returned to the man of God, he and all his company, and they came and they stood before him, and he said, behold, now I know that there is no God in all the earth but in Israel. Now therefore I pray thee, take a blessing of thy servant. But he said, as the Lord liveth, before whom I stand, I will receive none. And he urged him to take it, but he refused. And Naaman said, shall there not then, I pray thee, be given to thy servant two mules, burden of earth, for thy servant will henceforth offer neither burnt offerings nor sacrifice unto other gods, but unto the Lord God. And this thing the Lord pardon thy servant, that when my master goeth into the house of Rimmon to worship there, and he leaneth on my hand, and I bow myself in the house of Rimmon, which is the god of the Syrians, when I bow down myself in the house of Rimmon, the Lord pardon thy servant in this thing. And he said unto him, go in peace. So he departed from him a little way. So I'm going to stop there. We're going to back up. We're going to unpack this thing. So again, I want you guys to be thinking about who is showing faith in this story. Well, first of all, let's look at Naaman. Naaman the man. So man goes in your blank if you're taking notes. So who is this guy? Well, number one, he's the captain of the host of Syria. So captain of the host means what for you Bible students?
The leader of the army.
He is the leader of the army for the king of Syria, which happens to be an enemy of Israel. So he happens to be a Gentile. Okay? So not only that, he's a military man. So I would liken him to, you know, a rough, tough military guy like maybe George Patton. Hannibal, the guy back in about 300 B.C. that took an army to Rome and was trying to defeat Rome. He took a bunch of elephants across the Mediterranean Sea through the Alps to try to come into Rome from the back door to get Rome. And because Rome was trying to defeat everybody at that point, so he's going to defeat them. A genius of an army guy, but the Romans just kind of wore him out, and finally at the end, I don't know what happened to him, but he was no threat. But he was a great general. Nobody could defeat him. The Romans couldn't do anything with him, so they would just back off and kind of surround him and, you know, wear him out. So he ran out of people, ran out of money, but he was a military guy. Erwin Rommel, I don't know if that's on your list. Can anybody tell me who Erwin Rommel was?
Second World War?
Yes.
The Desert Fox.
Okay, so he is a German commander. And I read a biography of Erwin Rommel. I don't know if it's, what's the one that's, he didn't write it himself, but it's, is that a biography or auto, or a, what's the next term?
Autobiography.
Autobiography. What's the difference?
One is from the person, the autobiography, they're telling their own story.
Okay, and then the biography is just written by someone else?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I read a biography of this guy, and he was just a military guy through and through. So when he was given an order, it was like, yes, sir, you know, I'm going to do this. And so even at the end of his life, he told Hitler, we can't win this war. Well, guess what Hitler did? Had him taken out and shot. His top commander of the military.
He was trying to kill, Hitler was trying to kill all his commanders.
Well, he probably was at the end.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he was a mad guy. But also, Rommel had fought in World War I, and his son fought in World War II, and his son, in this book I read, he was having a conversation with his son, where his son was talking about the Jewish people and we need to annihilate them and all that, like Hitler was doing. And he told his son, he goes, he didn't believe that because he fought with a lot of Jewish people in World War I. He actually had respect for them. So you're thinking, well, wait a minute, you're still fighting under Hitler, but just because you fought under somebody doesn't mean you believed in, you know, what they wanted. So I kind of had kind of some respect for this guy, Erwin Rommel, after reading the book. But he's a military guy. And then I'm thinking, okay, who's somebody we think of? You know, John Wayne in Green Beret. You know, he's a military guy. That's what this guy Neiman is, okay? So he's a military guy. Number two, it says he's a great man. Look at your verse 1. Now Neiman, captain of the host of the king of Syria, was what? A great man. So it says he's a great man. And then it says, with his master, and honorable, because by him the Lord had given victory unto Syria. And then what's it say? He was also a mighty man of valor. Now who wrote all that about this guy? God did. This is what God is writing about this Gentile captain of the army, enemy of Israel. It's like, wow. God thought a little bit about this guy. This guy must have had some character about him, even though he was the enemy. Okay? And it says, by him the Lord had given victory unto Syria. So not only was the Syrians fighting Israel at times, they were also fighting the Assyrians, and they had kind of taken them over at this stage. And so this is what God says about Naaman. And here's what his name means. His name means delightful, pleasant, or agreeable. Is that in your handout? Okay. So in the book of Ruth, I got a little side note here. In the book of Ruth, what was Ruth's mother-in-law's name?
Naomi.
Naomi is the feminine form, and Naaman is the masculine form. It's the same name. Okay? And her name meant basically the same thing. If I remember, it was pleasant. It was delightful. And then, you know, in the story with her and Ruth, you know, she got bitter and she said, don't call me Naomi anymore, call me Mara, which means being bitter. So Naaman has that name, and that was probably for a reason, because I suspect that this military guy was not just rough and gruff. I think he was probably a man of high moral character. Probably a man that you could reason or talk with. You know, some of these guys, you know, if you're way up there, you know, they think everybody else is beneath them and they treat them that way. I'm thinking this guy probably wasn't like that. I'm thinking this guy probably was a decent guy, okay? But, number 7 on your list, but he was a leper. There's another one of those buts in the Bible. There it is. Okay? He had all this going for him, but he was a leper. Now, leprosy is a terrible disease. It started inside your body and then it manifested into sores on your body and progressed until you began to lose limbs and eventually death. It was contagious. You had to be quarantined and separated from everybody. It's a terrible disease and it's a type of sin. The Bible uses leprosy as a type of sin. So, I mean, these are things we know. But this is the condition of Naaman. He's a great guy, had all these things going for him, but he was a leper. So that's the first character I want to look at. But then I want to look at this young maid. Okay? First of all, she was a captive. Okay? Captive goes in your blank. Anybody else want a handout? I've got 4 more I didn't hand out. You guys okay? Does anybody else want one? Okay. So whoever's taking notes, you got to take good notes for the other one. Okay. So she was a captive. She had been taken out of her home country and her home. Okay. She was the maid of Naaman's wife. Number four, she had respect unto her mistress and eventually and also unto Naaman. And you go, well, how do you know that? It'll come over in a minute. Number five, she had great faith. Faith goes in your blank. Number six, if you have a blank for that. Number six, she was a great witness. Okay. And again, how do I say that? Well, she could have hated her mistress, and she could have hated Naaman because she is she's a captive. She had been taken as a slave. But you know what? I don't think she was had that type of an attitude. Otherwise, she wouldn't have told them about her God. Okay? She wouldn't have told them about his prophet. She wouldn't have told them that Naaman could have been healed. Even in the condition that she was in, being kidnapped in a foreign country, serving a lady and not being free, she testified about her God. Now that's a person that's in a, between a rock and a hard place. Okay? Which kind of reminds me of somebody like Gracia Burnham. Do you guys remember that lady, Gracia Burnham? She was kidnapped back in 2001 in the Philippines, her and her husband. They were marched around in the wilderness for about a year. They were trying to get ransom from them. And you know one thing kidnappers need to realize? You don't kidnap a missionary because they don't have any money. And the people behind there aren't going to pay a big ransom for them. But they did. And I remember Gracia and Burnham for a year. Can you imagine going through the jungle for a year? Her husband ended up dying at the end. And these people had a tie to Kansas City. They had went to Bible college up here in, at Belton, right? At Calvary. Okay. So I have great respect for that lady, Gracia Burnham. And I really felt for her, that, especially when she was liberated but her husband died. But I'm also thinking of, there's a lady by the name of Darlene Dibler, who was a missionary that was held prisoner back in World War II in New Guinea. She was the first white woman missionary that went into the mid-continent in New Guinea back in World War II. And I read a story about her, and her husband went into the interior of New Guinea before World War II started. And in the middle, while they were there, World War II started. The Japanese came down. They took over the island of, or that's a big island of New Guinea. She was put in a concentration camp, her and her husband. Her husband also died in the concentration camp. And I know she had a Bible study. She could learn, she knew two or three languages. She was a little farm girl from Iowa that just volunteered to be a missionary at a mission conference in her church. And I'm like, wow, does that hit home? And I'm like, so she's there, she has a Bible study. People were getting saved in the Bible study that was in the prison camp that she was at, and they would thank God for the war, because before the war they didn't know who Christ was. Now that's rough. Can you imagine being in a concentration camp ran by the Japanese and you're thanking God for the war because now you have a relationship with Christ? Wow. But anyway, I remember the story of her. I remember how she was a witness for Christ. I remember how they were going to kill her. She was on death row for the Japanese. And God saved her life. It's an amazing story. If you hear that, read the story about her. But these are, you know, I'm just talking about women like this young lady. Okay? They were a witness for the Lord, even during extreme circumstances. So that's the second person. And then I want to look at number three here, the king's reaction. So we have two kings. We have the king of Syria and we have the king of Israel. So let's look at the king of Syria in verses 4-5. Let's see what he does. And one went in, that one is Naaman, and told his lord, which is the king of Syria, saying, thus and thus said the maid that is in the land of Israel. And the king of Syria said, you're crazy. No, he didn't, did he? He said, go. And I will send a letter unto the king of Israel, describing what's going on here. And he departed, and he took with him 10 talents of silver, 6,000 pieces of gold, and 10 changes of raiment. That king of Syria didn't miss a beat. He's like, this is what you're asking me. This is what the girl told you. Then let's send you on your way. Okay? And so he doesn't think twice. And I don't know how much 10 talents of silver and 6,000 pieces of gold were, but I tell you, they were a lot. Apparently, this man, this captain of the army, meant a lot to the king of Syria. So now let's look at the king of Israel, his response, to see if it's kind of the same in verses 6 through 7. And he brought the letter to the king of Israel, saying, now when this letter has come to thee, behold, I have therewith sent Naaman, my servant, to thee, that thou mayest recover him of his leprosy. And it came to pass, when the king of Israel had read the letter, that he rent his clothes, and he said, he probably said this in a hushed tone, don't you think? Am I God that he would? No, I'm thinking he's shouting this, saying, am I God to kill and to make alive that this man doth send unto me to recover a man of his leprosy? Wherefore consider, I pray you, and see how he seeketh a quarrel against me. He's basically saying he's given me something, an impossible task, just because he wants to fight against our country. So the king of Israel gets mad. He rends his clothes. He reacts in the flesh. And he says, am I who? God. God goes in your blank. Am I God who can cleanse this man of leprosy? It's impossible. Basically, I think that's a blank you also have. This is a scheme to go to war with me. And then this whole time, the king doesn't say anything about sending him to Elisha the prophet. There, Elisha the prophet is in the land of Samaria, in the land of where this king of Israel is at, which is the northern kingdom. And he's been doing miracles all along. And yet the king isn't paying any attention, or he's not believing it, or he doesn't believe in the miracles that he does. And he surely doesn't believe in his God. So here we have the king of Israel showing his disbelief. He has no faith in the story. He has no faith in Elisha, and he has no faith in the God of Israel. So number four, let's look at the prophet's commands in verses 8 through 10. And it was so, when Elisha, the man of God, had heard that the king of Israel had rent his clothes, that he sent to the king, saying, wherefore hast thou rent thy clothes? Let him come now to me, and he shall know that there is a prophet in Israel. And my point is, the king should have already known that. Either he went brain dead at the point, or he didn't believe in the God of Israel. So Naaman came with his horse and his chariot and stood at the door of the house of Elisha. And Elisha sent a messenger to him, saying, go and wash in the Jordan 7 times, and thy flesh shall come again to thee, and thou shalt be clean. So let's look at what the prophet said, his commands. Number one, send the man Naaman to me. Notice the king doesn't send Naaman to Elisha. And just somehow, I don't know how it happened, but somehow, Elisha hears about this and sends to the king and says, hey, send him to me. And I'll let him know that there's a prophet. And I'll let him know that there is a God in Israel. And by the way, king, hopefully you will too. You would think he would catch on to that, wouldn't you? And then the second command that he says, he tells a servant to go and tell Naaman, go wash 7 times. So 7 goes in your blank. 7 times in the river Jordan, and you will be cleansed. And there's probably a message right there in the number 7, but I won't do that for today for time's sake. And so we're going to look at Naaman's reactions. And again, like I said, we're just playing Columbo. What's the facts of the story? You know, a lot of times you want to know how I teach something in the Bible. What's the who, what, where, when, and why? Read the text, go through that, come up with the answer. Okay? And then find out, why did God put that story in the Bible? Now you know the secret of preaching. You all can go preach, right? Okay. And so, let's look at Naaman's reactions in verses 11 through 19. Let me read that again just to get us there, or at least part of it. Verse 11, "But Naaman was wroth, and he went away, and he said, Behold, I thought he would surely come out unto me and stand and call on the name of the Lord." Who's the he there?
Prophet.
The prophet. He goes, "I thought at least the prophet of God, which is Elisha, would come and talk to me." And he sent a messenger to the door. I mean, does he not know who I am? You know, I don't know what's going through Naaman's mind. And he says, but he was mad. He went away and he starts thinking and saying this. And he goes, "I thought this guy would come out and strike his hand over the place and recover and cleanse me, basically." And then verse 12, he says, "Are not Abana and Phapar, rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? May I not wash in them and be clean?" So he went away in a rage. So he names these two rivers back in where he's from in Syria. And I don't know what the rivers were. Maybe those two rivers were nice, crystal clean rivers, like, you know, like down at Roaring River or the Current River, you know, we go canoeing on or something like that. Maybe the Jordan was like the Grand, you know, muddy and full of snakes. I don't know. But he's complaining about it. He's like, "Why do I got to go to the Jordan River and wash?" So he goes away mad. Okay, he gets mad, he starts to go home, and he starts complaining. Now, I don't know about you, but I would never do what he did.
Sure.
Yeah, I'd probably be complaining too. I mean, I hate to say it, but, you know, I'm a complainer. I don't know if you guys are, but I like to complain. And I just need to keep my mouth shut most of the time. But he starts complaining. And he's saying all this out loud because his servants come and talk to him. And they're like, "Where are we going?" And it's like, "The river's that way and you're going this way." And he's, you know, I'm sure he's just letting it all out. And he goes, he starts complaining. He goes, "You know, this visit's not turned out like I thought it would. It's been a total bust. The whole point of coming all the way here, going through all this, and it's nothing like I thought it would go. It's completely different, and I'm just going to head home." But his servants give him some advice. Now, remember his name and his character that I mentioned earlier? Now, part of this is speculation, but I'm suspecting that he was a man that you could approach and reason with. So his servants go, "Hey, wait a minute, Naaman. If he would have said to climb to the top of the highest mountain, would you have done it?" He's probably going, "Yeah." He goes, "Well, what's so hard about going to the river and dipping yourself seven times? Why don't you just do it?" And so they talk to him. They said, "Hey, let's do that." Okay? And so he does. So he goes into the river and he dips seven times and he comes out healed. Is that what it says? No, it says cleansed. Everywhere I read in the Bible, it talks about leprosy. You're never healed of leprosy. You're only cleansed. Isn't that amazing? And again, leprosy is a picture of what? Sin. Sin is never healed. It's only cleansed. And it's only cleansed by the blood of the Lamb. Just coincidence, guys. Probably nothing to that, but that's what I'm seeing. And so he gets cleansed and he returns to Elisha and confesses in God. Let's go back and look at this. Verse 15. "And he returned to the man of God, he and all his company, and he came and he stood before him and he said, Behold, now I know that there is no God in all the earth but in Israel." You know, he could have came and fallen down at the feet of Elisha and said, "Oh man, you're the man. You healed me." But he doesn't. He goes back to the prophet and he says, "Your God is truly God." Okay? So he gets it. He gets it. So and then the rest of the story has some things, but he's talking to Elisha and he says, "Man, when I go back home to my king and when my king goes into the house of his God," he goes, I ask for forgiveness because it's not me, because that's his God. My God is now the God of Israel because I know he is God. Okay. That's kind of the rest of it here. So Naaman gives in to his pride. I don't know if you have that in your handout. He obeys the prophet's words and he gets cleansed. So let's think about this for a minute. Naaman's obedience led to his cleansing, which led to him being thankful, which led to him to confess in the God of the Bible. Confess goes in your blank. Now, does that ring a bell to any of you guys? It does me. Kind of reminds me of me. Naaman heard a message from God. He obeys the message and he confesses his belief in God. And again, notice he doesn't fall down at Elisha's feet and worship him because he knows that it's Elisha's God that did the miracle. Okay? He knows it's the God of the little maiden that has cleansed him. Okay? And this has been a life-changing event in Naaman's life. I don't want to just read this and kind of, you know, nonchalant, because let's think about this. And a lot of times I like to put myself in the story. And I'm like, think about if this was you and you were Naaman. What did it mean to have leprosy in your life? Number one, a lot of things. So it changed his life. His leprosy was cleaned. Now he could go back and keep the job that he had. So obviously when he had this, the disease was fairly new. They knew what he had. He could still be around people to a little bit. It hadn't affected him so much that he couldn't do his job, but it would have. So, you know, he could continue on with his job. He didn't have to be quarantined from his people. He could go home to his family. He could touch his wife. He could touch his children. He could touch his servants and his soldiers again. He could be around people. But number six, I don't know if you have this in your handout, he knew who to worship for the first time in his life. And you talk about a life-changing event. He had one. So when we look at this story, and let me just stop. As far as getting saved in the Old Testament, this is as close as you're going to get. Because he obeys a message from God's man, from God, from God's prophet, from his man, and he confesses in the God of Israel. He heard a message, he acted upon that message, and he confessed with his mouth who God is. That's as close as you're going to get to salvation in the Old Testament. Okay? So who gets the glory from this story? God does. And it all started from where? The little girl that didn't keep her mouth shut. Okay? I say that kind of tongue in cheek. But anyway, here we have a captive girl, and she could have just said nothing, but she opened up her mouth and says, hey, there is a prophet in Israel. There is a God in Israel who can heal you of your leprosy, of your sin, basically is what she said. And she opened up her mouth and gave a testimony of her God and his prophet. And so I don't think it stops with her, because I think Naaman probably picked up on that. That's just my thinking. I think he probably did likewise. So we know in the story that Naaman goes back and he tells Elisha what had happened. Do you think it stopped there? I wonder if he went back to the king of Israel and showed him. Doesn't say so in the story. And I'm not sure about that. But I know one thing. He went back to his king and told him, because his king had sent him there. So I know he had to do that. I have a sneaking suspicion he probably even went back to the king of Israel and said, hey, look what God has done. Look what your man of God has done for me. And he goes back to his king, says the same thing. He probably goes back home and tells his wife. Well, do you think he told his wife what happened? Absolutely. You think he told the people underneath him in his command what had happened? Absolutely. I think he's probably like the little girl. He just can't keep his mouth shut. He's telling everybody probably what happened to him. And if they knew him before this happened, it would make a difference to them. So, I think this story is a story of faith, specifically with the little girl, and it goes to Naaman. And I pray that our testimony would be like the little maiden, like Naaman, and that we would tell people about our God and about Jesus and how He can change people's lives because He's changed ours. So let's go out and live our faith out by our actions, by what we say, by what we do, so God can get the glory. And if we have our faith in Christ, we need to open our mouth and we need to share that with others. We need to shout it from the rooftops. We need to shout it wherever we possibly can, even though most people won't listen to us, because we have the only hope that there is. And even some of these people that don't, you know, I'm kind of a rough guy at times. There's some people that I just think, you know, some people, you know, how do you tell somebody who worships Satan the love of God? Because in my boat, it's kind of like, I don't think I'm going to go there. But in essence, we need to tell everybody and anybody. And it's the people that think that we think will never listen or react to our story, or maybe make fun of us or laugh at us or cuss at us or whatever. They need to hear it as much as anybody else. Because what's our purpose? To be a testimony for the Lord Jesus Christ. Because why? Number one, we need to give Him the glory and the honor of our life, but other people's lives depend upon it for eternity. Everyone. I was thinking about that on the way here today. Man, there are people, there are globalists, there are people that want to kill us. And yet we still need to tell them the story of Christ. You know, in Vision Conference one night, one of the ladies played Corrie Ten Boom. Were you guys here to see that? And yet, after World War II, after the prisoner of war camp, after her sister had died in prisoner of war camp, I think her mom and dad was probably killed even before the concentration camp, and a guard came up to her and said, and I think the guard at that point had got saved, is that right? And asked for forgiveness, and she said it was the hardest thing she could ever do. But she did it. Man, that would be hard. To see the guards that was responsible for her own sister to get killed, and to give them forgiveness, and or tell them that you forgive them, that would be hard. But guess what? Eternity for people depends on our witness for Christ, no matter who they are. And that should be what we need to do. So let's pray and we'll get out of here. Father in heaven, Lord, I just want to thank you for the story in the Bible. The story of this little girl, the story of Naaman, the story of him coming to know you as his God, Lord. So I just pray that we would open our mouth, that we would live our life to be an example for you, Lord, to be a testimony of your Son, Jesus. And Lord, I just pray that we would share that, how you have changed our lives, with others so that you can change their lives. So I just pray for open doors. I pray for people to at least listen to us, Lord. And I pray that we would just have the hope that you've given to us just instilled in our life, to be the witness that we need to be, and take the focus off of ourselves and put it on you, Lord, and put it on eternity. And I just ask that we would, you would get the blessing from that. And I pray that we would just also see, fruit as a result. So I ask that today, Lord, give us a good day today. Help us to just listen to that, Brian as he preaches in the main service, and just help us to be a witness for you in Christ's name. Amen.